Les colloques du Collège de France.
So, the first presentation will be given by Virginie Herlaché. I think everyone knows her. She is from École des Ponts, Cernix. And she will be presenting a joint work with Mathias Duss, Geneviève Dusson, Clément Guillot, and Pascal Joël Sofo on neural network method for Schrödinger eigenvalue problems. So, tomorrow I think we have two presentations on eigenvalue problem, which is important. So Virginie Herlaché is an applied mathematician working, and I know her from the very beginning of her thesis, okay, some time ago. So she is a principal investigator on energy starting grant. The name is ILIP, that was awarded 2 years ago, I guess, something like that. 3 years ago already. She was awarded by the 2023 Irène Julio Curie Prize by the Academy of Science for the Young Female Scientist category. Okay, so the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Yvon, for this nice presentation and for the invitation. It's really a huge honor and a great pleasure to give the first talk in this mini symposium in your honor, Yvon. Thank you so much for everything you've done for me since the very beginning, as you recalled. And I'm also very happy to have the opportunity to present this work. So with Mathias Duss, Geneviève Dusson. Geneviève is going to give a talk tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. Clément Guillot and Pascal Joël Sofo. And I would like to highlight more particularly the input of Mathias Duss in what I'm going to present. Mathias was a postdoctoral student in my lab by the time the work has been done, and he has now a research position in Strasbourg. So I'm very happy to present this work on the mathematical analysis on some numerical methods based on neural networks for the resolution of Schrödinger eigenvalue problems. So, first of all, why did we care about this type of problems? Where our motivation stems from electronic structure calculations for molecules. So, more specifically, for those of you who are not familiar with quantum chemistry, you have to think about a molecule as a system which is composed of nuclei. So, nuclei are quite heavy particles composed of protons and neutrons, and that are positively charged, electrically charged. And you've got also some electrons. Electrons are much lighter particles than the nuclei. And in that case, you cannot model them as classical particles, the state of which can be described by their positions and velocities in space. Okay? So electrons, at this case, have to be treated like quantum particles. And I'm going to make this more precise in the rest of the talk. Just for the sake of clarity, to have a schematic picture into mind, you have to think of the electrons within a molecule as some kind of cloud which keeps the molecule stable and acts as some kind of gluing cloud to keep the nuclei stay bound together. Okay, and more particularly, the methods I'm going to talk about search in computing an approximation of the ground state of the electrons within a molecule. The ground state being the state of the electrons that have the lowest possible energy. This is a very important quantity to compute because it stems for all physical properties of the molecule like electrical, optical, magnetical properties, predictions of chemical reactions, and trying to understand how this ground state of electrons looks like within a molecule. Well, it's very important in order to account for properties of matter at this microscopic scale. And I'm very, very happy to have this opportunity to thank Yvon and all the PIs of the ERC project EMC2, okay, which I was very happy to be part of, because that's where typically I learned mostly about this type of problems. And I want to advertise that this is a very rich playground for reduced order modeling for people who are interested in this type of problems. So let me first present you what's the, let's say, the holy grail that we want to solve in this type of context. So here, for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to use atomic units just to keep notation simple. And I'm going to consider the many-body electronic Schrödinger model, within the Born-Oppenheimer approximation. So Oppenheimer is a guy from the movie, okay? And so that's really the same guy. And this Born-Oppenheimer approximation says the following thing. The nuclei, as I just said, are much, much heavier particles than the electrons. So these guys, you can model them as classical particles within this approximation. And so our molecule will be a physical system, which is composed of M nuclei, M being an integer. And their state will be described by their positions L1 up to Rm that are vectors of R3. And their electric charges, Z1 up to Zm, that are positive integers. Okay, here the elementary electric charge being equal to 1 within the this atomic unit system. And in addition to the nuclei, you've got the electrons. I'm going to assume that there are n of them within the molecule. As I told you, at this scale, you have to model them as quantum particles. And so their state will be represented by a complex function psi, okay, which depends on n vectors of R3, x1 up to xn. Okay. More precisely, the wave function psi that will describe this, the state of a set of n electrons with finite kinetic energy will belong to this set calligraphic A, which will be which I will call in, later in the call the admissible set of wave functions. Okay. And these are complex valued functions defined on R3n, that are square integrables, the gradient of which is also square integrables, and which are antisymmetric with respect to the permutation of the n unknowns x1 up to xn. Okay? And in addition, these wave functions, they have to satisfy the following constraint, normalization constraint, that is that their L2 norm has to be equal to 1. Why is that? Because actually this wave function has the following physical interpretation. If you look at the squared modulus of the wave function, this represents the probability density of finding the n electrons somewhere in the space at positions x1 up to xn. Okay? And so this probabilistic interpretation naturally leads to this normalization of the wave function, namely that the integral of the square modulus of psi of the whole space R3n has to be equal to 1, which is exactly this normalization conditions that I've just written here. Okay? So that's typically the way the state of a set of n electrons is described within a molecule. And now, as I told you, we want to compute or characterize the ground state of the set of electrons, okay? And as I told you, the ground state corresponds to the state of the electrons that has the lowest possible energy within the molecule, okay? So the energy of this ground state will be given by a scalar which will be denoted by Eg in the rest of the talk. And Eg is naturally defined as the infimum over all possible wave functions belonging to this admissible set of the energy of the electrons, the state of which is characterized by the wave function psi. And the energy of the electrons is given as a sum of three different terms, okay? The first term here, T of psi, corresponds to the kinetic energy of the electrons, and it's just the integral over R3n of the square modulus of the gradient of psi. You've got a second term here, which corresponds to the energy corresponding to the electron-electron interactions, okay, which is given by this formula here, where the C potential corresponds to the Coulombic potential between all the different pairs of electrons. And lastly, this last quantity, V and E of psi, correspond to the interaction energy between the nuclei of the molecule and the electrons. And it reads as follows, where here V of x is a function divided over R3, and V of x is just the Coulombic potential generated by all the nuclei of the molecule in the space. Okay? And so what we want to do, we want to compute Eg and the wave function that realizes these minimization problems inside this admissible set. And so if you write the first order Euler-Lagrange equations associated to this minimization problem, this ends up in the following equation that gives the solution of which is the wave function that characterizes the ground state of the electrons within the molecule, denoted by psi j. And psi j is a solution of the following eigenvalue problem, Schrödinger eigenvalue problem, okay, associated to an operator big H that I'm going to describe later. Okay, and here Ej which was the ground state energy of the set of electrons, is the lowest eigenvalue of the operator H, and psi j is an eigenfunction associated to the eigenvalue Ej. And H, this operator, which is called the Hamiltonian of the system of electrons, is an operator which contains three terms, each term corresponding to one of the terms inside the energy that I've just described. So here you recognize a minus Laplace, which comes from the kinetic energy term. Okay, and here you see the sum of the two other terms corresponds to the Coulombic interaction energies of electrons with electrons and nuclei with electrons. Okay, and this the sum of these two terms read like a multiplication operator by some potential, and the sum of these two terms is a potential that I'm going to denote later in the talk by W, and this is a function depending on n vectors of R3, x1 up to xn. Okay. And so this Hamiltonian is called the Schrödinger operator. And so we are interested in studying neural network methods, the aim of which is to compute an approximation of psi j and ej solution of this type of Schrödinger eigenvalue problem. Okay. So this is a linear eigenvalue problem. So in principle, it should be easy to solve, but because the wave function is defined on a very high dimensional space, R3n, and you have to imagine that n, the number of electrons within a molecule, can be very high. Well, you cannot solve it with standard classical methods like finite elements or finite volumes because of the curse of dimensionality that most of you are very familiar with. Because the complexity of these methods and scales exponentially with n, the number of electrons, and very rapidly, they are just not possible to carry out for this type of problem. And that's why, while theoretical chemists haven't waited for mathematicians to try to circumvent these problems, and there is a huge zoology of methods in order to try to circumvent this curse of dimensionality for the Schrödinger eigenvalue problem. So there exists some theory. For instance, density functional theory is one of the most famous theory for this type of problems, that enabled to transform this eigenvalue problem defined in a very high dimensional state space onto some other approximate problems, the resolution of which is much easier than the original Schrödinger eigenvalue problems. But in general, it includes model approximations that we have to face in order to make life easier and these objects computable. Okay. More recently, some works have introduced some numerical methods that use neural networks techniques in order to compute approximations of this ground state wave function and the corresponding ground state energy. There is now a huge zoology of such methods. I'm just giving you a far from exhaustive list, for instance, the Fermi-Net method, Poly-Net method, Zipf-Erwin, and so on. And all these methods use one way or another some neural networks in order to approximate the solution of this electronic wave function, solution of the Schrödinger eigenvalue problem. And here, what we wanted to do in this work is to try to understand, at least on some toy problems, why this type of methods do work in some cases. Here, I'm presenting you a table, okay, of computations that we carried out with Mathias Duss, Geneviève Dusson, Clément Guillot, and Pascal Joël-Sophon, where we compared on some simple molecules. You see here the lithium atoms, carbon atom, and so on and so forth. We compared some neural network methods. Here we considered the Fermi-Net and the Poly-Net methods, okay. We had to do some start. With the exact energy of the molecule when it was known in the literature. It's not known for all of this molecule. And with another type of numerical methods based on tensor approximations that is called DMRG. And what we can see is that most of the time, at least for these relatively simple molecules, the approximation of the energy given by this neural network on that, they are not too far from the exact value when we know it, or from the values given by the tensor method for which we have more guarantee. Okay, here just this cross means that we are not able to carry out this DMRG method for this last molecule. Okay, so we wanted to try to understand at least partially on some toy problems why Indeed, this agreement could be seen on at least on these simple molecules. So that's the aim of the talk I'm going to give you today, is what do we understand from a mathematical, theoretical point of view on this type of problems, this type of approximations, and mostly what are the remaining open equations, and there are lots of them remaining. So perhaps for people hearing and interested in this type of problems, you could have some ideas on these open problems. So here I'm going to introduce the toy problem on which we are able to understand some things, okay? Which is not exactly the electronic Schrödinger problem that I've introduced to you before. Here, the toy problem that I'm going to consider is the following. Consider that you have a bounded spatial domain, omega, that will be 0, 1 to the d. So d will be the dimension of the eigenvalue problem, okay? And assume that you're interested in solving this eigenvalue problem, so with a Schrödinger operator of the form minus Laplace plus potential, multiplicative potential, okay? Plus some Neumann boundary conditions on the bounded domain omega, okay? And here we want to analyze what neural networks methods do in order to approximate lambda, the lowest eigenvalue of this operator, and u star, a corresponding eigenfunction, okay? Here we are making an assumption which we need in the analysis and which is not satisfied by the electronic Schrödinger operator, okay? We have to for now, we need to assume that the potential W is bounded on omega, okay? So, for the moment, we are not able to treat Coulombic interaction potentials in the analysis we do, but let's hope that for the future, some people will be able to say some things. And so, what can we say? In order to analyze these neural network methods, we need to reformulate this eigenvalue problem as a constraint optimization problem. So actually, u star, an eigenfunction associated to the lowest eigenvalue of the Schrödinger operator, you can equivalently express it as a minimizer of the following constraint minimization problem of E of u, that is the energy associated to the Schrödinger operator, the expression of which is given here, for u belonging in H1 of omega, and the L2-norm of which is equal to 1. And this is the constraint that comes from the normalization of the wave function that I've introduced before. Okay. Keep in mind some notation. So E of u will be the energy associated to the Schrödinger operator. And later in the talk, I'm going to denote by C of u the constraint so that C of u equals 0 implies that the L2 norm of u is equal to 1. So keep in mind E of u and C of u. Okay? In order to analyze how these neural networks work, I need to introduce some appropriate functional space that are called the Baron functional spaces. Okay? So here, of course, we are not the first one to consider these spaces. You can find some references, similar references, in particular in these works, okay? Here, in our setting, for a given positive value S, the Baron space Bs of omega will be defined as a set of functions mu that are integrable over the domain omega, and the Bs norm of u being finite, the Bs norm of u being given as this formula here, and where this formula, you see, you've got the Fourier coefficient of u appearing, okay? So keep that in mind. And now what we are able to say is how well functions belonging to some of these Baron functional spaces are approximated by some neural networks with some prescribed architectures that I'm going to make precise later in the talk. Okay, so here I need to make more precise the architecture of the neural networks that we are able to understand so far. Okay, so to explain this architecture, I need to introduce sigma, the activation function of the neural networks. Okay, it will be a function defined on R with values in R. I need also to introduce some parameter set the neural network will depend on. Okay. And so I'm going to introduce first the unbounded parameter set, which will play a crucial role in the analysis later, okay? So this parameter set, big theta, is a set of triplets AWB, such that A and B belongs to R, NW is a vector of RD, the norm of which is equal to 1. Here, this notation refers to the Euclidean norm of the vector W. So in other words, the unbounded parameter set that I'm going to consider, and you'll see how it will intervene in the rest of the talk, okay, is given by the Cartesian product of R with the unit sphere of RD and R. Okay? And later also, I will need to introduce some bounded parameter set. So for a given value of big R strictly positive, theta R is a set of parameters such that A and B have their absolute values bounded by this constant R as well. And so at the end of the day, this bounded parameter set is given by this Cartesian product here. I need both to explain to you the results that we get. So keep that in mind. Now, what is the architecture of neural networks that we are able to understand from a theoretical point of view? Actually, it's a very simple architecture. As far as I know, this is the only type of architecture on which we can understand some things for this type of eigenvalue problems. And more precisely, so these two-layer neural networks, here there will be functions um defined on the domain, spatial domain omega, that are given as a sum of m functions that are of the following form here. Here you see you've got a sum for the index I ranging from 1 to m. And for each index I corresponding to each term in this sum, you've got a function here that is of the form ai sigma of wi scalar x plus bi, where ai wi bi is an element of the parameter set. In general, of the unbounded parameter set. So here wi will be a unit vector of the sphere of RD, and ai and bi are scalars at this point. And you make a sum of m terms of this of the following form, and you just average it with a factor 1 over n. Okay? So the set of functions that you can construct like this for any m collections of parameters theta I belonging to this theta is a two-layer neural network with m neurons. Okay? And first question that one can ask oneself is, if you've got a function mu that belongs to one of these Baron functional sets that I've just introduced before, at which rate does the best possible error that you can achieve in the H1 norm for best possible error over all the two-layer neural networks with m neurons that you can construct, and at which rate does this error decay with m the number of neurons? And so here, to keep things simple, I'm going to restrict the presentation to the case where the activation function is just simply the hat activation function. So there are more general results, but here, for the sake of the talk, I'm going to talk only about the case where the activation function is this, the following one. Then there was this approximability theorem, which was proved in this series of papers by Wu and Wang, which says the following thing. If u belongs to the B2 Baron functional space corresponding to S equal 2, then for any m number of neurons that you can prescribe, there exists a two-layer neural network with m neurons such that the H1 error between u and um scales like 1 over square root of m times the constants, which depends in particular on the B2 norm of the function u. Okay? Here, what you see here, two things. First thing, in this constant C and in this B2 norm, the dimension D doesn't appear. Okay? So the dimension B is somehow hidden here in the sense that as D increases, the condition which for a function to belong to this B2 of omega set requires more and more classical regularity in the Sobolev set, for instance. Okay? And what you see is that the decay rate was scales like 1 over square root of m, with m the number of neurons. Okay. So that's a typical approximability property that you obtain. And so another natural question, when coming back to the Schrödinger eigenvalue problem, is the following. Does u star, the eigenfunction associated to the lowest eigenvalue of the Schrödinger eigenvalue problem, belongs to this space B2 of omega? And actually, it is the case provided that the potential W is bounded and belongs to the B0 of omega set. And if lambda is the lowest eigenvalue of the operator, it's simple. And for the rest of the talk, I'm going to assume that we are indeed in this situation in order to have these approximability properties. Okay? Now, how does neural network methods work in order to compute in practice such neural network approximations of this solution of the Schrödinger eigenvalue problem? Actually, here we are considering the so-called physically informed neural network approach. Okay, there are many of them, but that's the one we are able to analyze. The spin approach then consists in finding, for a prescribed number of neurons, m fixed, we search in the best parameters, the best set of m parameters, theta I star, all belonging to the parameter set theta, which solves the following minimization problem, constraint minimization problem. So remember, u star, the solution of the eigenvalue problem, was the the solution of the minimization problem of this functional E under the constraint that C of u is equal to zero, and this constraint encoded the L2 normalization condition on u. Okay? And so here, when we do a physically informed neural network approach, we look for the best collection of parameters theta I star that minimizes this minimization problem when we restrict the set of functions to the set of functions that can be written as two-layer neural networks with m neurons. Okay? And in practice, such a kind of minimization problems are solved by means of stochastic gradient descent algorithms in the parameter space theta to the m. Okay? And there is the following caveat, which is that this minimization problem is, in general, highly non-convex, and there is and with multiple local minima, and there is no theoretical guarantee in general that this gradient descent algorithm do convert to global optimizers of this minimization problems. And that's something we want, but nevertheless, as I showed you in the case of the Fermi-net, Polynet, and so on, it seems that this type of efforts find good approximations of the energy and corresponding wave function. So we wanted to try to understand why this could be the case, despite the very high non-convexity of these problems. In order to understand some things on this question, we have to use a measure representation that was originally introduced by Francis Back and Lenaik Shiza in other types of problems that are regression problems. Okay. So what was the idea that was very convenient in order to try to understand some theoretical things out of this type of very highly non-convex minimization problems? The idea is the following. Actually, any two-layer neural network with n neurons, you can also represent it as an integral over the parameter set theta of some function phi of theta x, the expression of which I've given here, against some probability measure mu m that is defined on this set theta. The probability measure, in the case of a two-layer neural network with m neurons, is simply a discrete measure charging all the parameters theta I that intervene in the previous expression that I've given to you. Okay, and the function phi depends on a parameter theta and on the spatial variable x, and is given by this quantity here, where you see here AWB and the hat activation function. Okay. Actually, more precisely, the measure mu m is a probability measure on theta, but it's also a probability measure with finite second order moments. So this will play a role later in the talk. And actually, the idea that they had on their regression task is the following. Instead of considering the original minimization problems over the set of the m collections of parameters theta I, we are going to consider another cross minimization problems that will be defined in terms of this measure, which represents the neural network. Okay? And so, more precisely, now they say that let's rather consider the following minimization problems, where we are going to look for the best possible measure mu star, such that, which minimizes the following constrained minimization problems, Overall, measures defined on the parameter set theta with finite second order moments, and such that you've got the energy where these two quantities, E of u mu and C of u mu, are defined by means of this function, u mu of x, which corresponds to the previous integral representation of this function phi of theta x against the measure mu. Okay? And so this quantity, E of u mu and C of u mu, you can just see them as quantities which depend on the measure mu. Okay? And now they say this problem here is easier to analyze than the previous one, which was defined on the parameter set theta to the m. Okay? So just we want to analyze what gradient descent algorithms do. Okay? If you stick to this minimization problem, the original one, defined in the parameter set theta to the m, this gradient descent algorithm, they roughly work as follows. Okay? You introduce some step size delta t, which will play the role of a time step later in the talk. And at iteration k, you compute an update of the set of the collection of parameters theta I k plus 1, following, for instance, the following rule. Here I'm forgetting about the constraint to keep things simple. Okay. And if you let, and more precisely, the gradient descent algorithm that I'm going to consider in this talk is the following one, where you define the updated values of the set of parameters as the solution of the following minimization problems, okay? Where here you've got d, which is the geodesic distance on the parameter set, a period. And this is not exactly, but almost very close to the following update rule, okay? Here again, I forget the normalization constraint to keep things simple. Why do I consider this? First of all, because this update rule is very close to the classical gradient descent rule that is used in the neural network libraries. And second, because this update rule, I can write it in almost straightforwardly in terms of probability measures. In the sense that now, if I want to transpose this type of gradient descent algorithm, if I write it in terms of probability measures, this amounts to computing an update of the probability measure mu, which is the solution of the following problem. Again, forgetting about the constraint for now. Okay? Here what you see is that there is, here you had the geodesic distance on the parameter set that was appearing here. Here you've got another type of distance, W2, which is defined over the set of probability measures defined on theta, and which is called the Wasserstein distance. Why does this Wasserstein distance appear here? So the definition, the proper definition, is given here. I'm going to go back on it a little later. But why does this distance appear in the gradient descent update rule defined in the space of probability measures? Because of the following. If you consider the squared Wasserstein distance between mu and uk in the case where mu is a discrete measure charging parameters theta and uk, one equal sign which should be erased, okay? And uk, which is a discrete measure charging the parameters theta ik, under some conditions on the set of parameters theta I and theta ik, this quantity is exactly equal to the sum of geodesic distances that appeared here. Okay, so if you want to rewrite this update rule in terms of measures, it's natural to consider the Wasserstein distance here. Okay, and this Wasserstein distance, its expression is given here. It's equal to the following minimization problem, where you see here again the geodesic distance on the parameter set appearing over the all couplings gamma that are probability measures defined on theta times theta with marginal respectively mu and nu. Okay. So just you don't need to remember the exact expression of the Wasserstein distance, okay, for the rest of the talk. Here, what we are able to analyze is not exactly this gradient descent algorithms, but it's a continuous in time dynamics stemming from this gradient descent. More precisely, what we are able to analyze is the continuous in time dynamics that we obtain by letting the step size delta t go to zero. Okay, so if we consider the limit delta t go to zero of the following update rule. What we would obtain, again forgetting about the constraint for the moment, we would obtain the following coupled system of ODEs, which would give the time derivative of the set of parameters theta I. Okay. So that's a picture when you consider the gradient descent algorithm defined in the parameter set. Okay. And now the question that we are asking. Now here you see I'm putting the constraint back again in the minimization problems. First of all, is it possible to define a continuous in time dynamics in the space of measures that is the limit as delta t goes to zero of the following update rule? Okay, that would be a first step. Can we characterize this continuous in time dynamics by means of some PDE? Does it converge in the long time limit? And if yes, can we identify its long time limit? The goal being that hopefully, at the end of the day, we want to prove that the long time limit of the following of the continuous in time dynamic enables to recover the solution of the Schrödinger eigenvalue problems that we've started from. Okay. So let's go through the following, and that's the program of the rest of the talk. Okay. And first, the two first questions. In order to have some theoretical results, we need to make an assumption that actually the activation functions that we use in order to describe the neural networks that we obtain, it has to be regular. And so in practice, we don't exactly use the hat activation function. We use a regularized version of it, okay, associated to some regularization parameter. Actually, the theoretical results that I'm going to tell you about still hold for any activation functions that are CFT with compact support. So first, indeed, there exists a continuous in time dynamics defined in the space of probability measures. Okay, and this is what this theorem says. And this theorem says also two things which are important. It says that first, we are able to characterize the solution of this continuous in time dynamics by means of the PDE, that is a nonlinear transport equation here associated to some velocity field, highlighted in red. I'm going to define this quantity later. Okay. And secondly, we can then characterize at time t the value of this probability measures solution of this continuous in time dynamics as the push forward image of the initial probability measure by the flow associated to this velocity field. Okay. So now, how does this velocity field write? It writes as follows. So you need to introduce all these quantities, okay, that depends on phi, okay, the function that enables to represent some functions by means of the probability measure mu. And so you've got all this expression here. And you've got here a quantity lambda mu. Lambda mu plays the role of the approximation of the eigenvalue of the Schrödinger eigenvalue problem. Okay? And so the velocity field is given by this formula here. And one thing that is very important for the analysis is that this quantity here, you can write it as it's a function of theta. And theta, remember, is a collection of A, W, and B. And actually, because of the different properties in the eigenvalue problem, this function here is equal to A times the function, which depends on mu, and also on the parameters W and B. So there is a specific dependence in the A parameter that is important to have the theoretical properties that we managed to prove. And then that's the main theorem of convergence that we are able to prove on this continuous in time dynamics defined in the space of probability measures. It says the following thing. Assuming that the initial probability measures as a compact support is such that the associated, so u mu zero, the associated function is normalized in L2, and that this particular set is included in the support of mu zero, and this set here introduces a set B that is the whole sphere RD times some bounded interval, the bounds of which depends on the dimension D. So provided that mu zero, the initial probability measure, satisfies this condition, then you've got two results. First, if you consider mu t a continuous in time solution of the dynamics I've introduced before, and if you assume that it converges in the long time limits to some new star, then necessarily this particular quantity that I've introduced is equal, has to be equal to zero on the parameter set. And lastly, if such a quantity is equal to zero on the parameter set for some probability measure mu, necessarily it means that the function represented by the probability measure mu has to be a solution, an eigenfunction of the Schrödinger operator with eigenvalue lambda mu appearing in the definition of this quantity. Okay? And so if you put these two results together, it means that if the long time continuous in time dynamics converges in Wasserstein sense to some long time limit mu star, necessarily the function represented by mu star has to be a solution of the Schrödinger eigenvalue problem. So which is nice, and which was not it was not obvious from the start. And the proof is 50 pages longer, but we were quite happy with this result. So, given the time, I intended to give you the main ideas of the proof, but I will not have time to do so. So I just want to briefly wrap up. Here, what I presented to you are some elements of mathematical analysis in order to analyze the convergence of gradient descent algorithms for two layers neural networks in order to approximate the solution of Schrödinger eigenvalue problems with bounded potential. And you see, we have to make all these steps, for instance, to go from the set of parameters to the minimization problem defined on the set of probability measures, consider this continuous in time dynamics, and so on and so forth, in order to be able to say that type of result. I don't know about any other types of methods to get such results which look like this, okay? In order to get this convergence result, we need to make these appropriate assumptions on the support of the initial probability measure. And what we see numerically is that, of course, numerically, we cannot have the full sphere, unisphere inside the support of the initial measure because we've got a finite number of neurons. But indeed, what we see is that if we try to approximate from the initial, the way that we initialize the parameters of the neural network with a finite number of neurons following this type of theoretical result, it indeed helps a lot in the convergence of the actual PIN algorithm. Okay. Open questions. There are lots of them. Does the dynamic indeed converge in the long time limit? We are not able to prove it. We have to assume that the continuous in time dynamics converge in the long time limit to be able to express the convergence result. Other open questions. If it converges, does it converge to a solution of the eigenvalue problem associated with the lowest eigenvalue problem, which was our motivation stemming from electronic structure calculations? We are not able to do so. What I believe is that we could prove that the set of initial measures for which this is not the case should be quite small. But this is still an open question. Other questions? Can we approximate this infinite width continuous in time dynamics by some finite width two-layer neural networks dynamics using some propagation of chaos results and letting the number of parameters m go to infinity with quantitative rates in order to assess what should be a good number of neurons. And of course, here, all I have presented you concerned two-layer neural networks, which is a very simple neural network architectures. Of course, in practice, PolyNet, FermiNet, and so on, they use more complex architectures, okay? And there are very interesting works for regression tasks. For instance, I'm mentioning this one by Barboni, Perrin, Viala, where they considered more complex architectures given by ResNet. My belief is that we could go towards this more complex neural network architecture up to the price of changing the Wasserstein distance in order to understand the gradient descent algorithm. And with that, I'm going to stop here and thank you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site. collège-2-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.